Hello, Otters. Happy Saturday. It's time for the Weekender. It's time for us to get a round-the-table catch-up on everything that's been going on in the world of gaming. This morning, I'm joined by the wonderful Ben on screen, our guide, our mega man of everything that's happening gaming-wise. And then to cast shade on everything, you have me, Warren, and we also have Jerry, who's just enormous and casts shade in his own unique way. We have Justin,
who brings the light.
Just off the top of your head.
Yeah, shine off your head.
Yeah.
Mr. Specular.
Mr. Specular. And then we have Brother Lloyd.
Hello.
Right. Next weekend, Star Wars Hobby Weekend.
Yes.
We're going to have wonderful guests. It's our last big event of 2019.
Yes.
We're now about to embark on that final slippery journey into 2020, Justin.
Yeah.
Did you ever think you would make it?
I never really thought about 2020. I mean, the one that really stumped me as a kid was going, wait, I'm going to be, I think it was 15 whenever the year 2000 rolled around.
Yes. I was about to say the same thing, right? I remember as a 15-year-old or whatever, thinking about, I'm going to be alive in the year 2000.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, but was there not a show called Beyond 2020 or something like that?
Beyond 2000.
Was it Beyond 2000? It feels a bit weird that we're only now days.
Yeah. It's crap. There's no replicants.
Days away from 2020.
There's no flying cars.
Well, the interesting thing about it is that when we were teenagers, all the stuff that we were presented as in the future, we are now going beyond. So Blade Runner is now in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Back to the Future is now in the past. And both of them had flying cars.
Mm. Cyberpunk 2020. Which I believe the kids are about to get next year with Keanu Reeves as Cyberpunk 2087. When it first came out, it was, I think, 1987, and then they've just advanced it. Mm. So it was 2020.
Yes.
Whenever I played it in the second edition, and I haven't seen any snap cards, flying cars, or people with wolvers. Mm. Yeah, it's a big disappointment.
Have we passed Demolition Man yet? Mm. What year is that? Ben. We need that Googled.
We've passed when he goes in to the freezer, but we haven't passed when he comes out.
Yeah, we're still waiting to see the Schwarzenegger Presidential Library.
Well, the three seashells, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. That's the bigger question.
Yeah, that is the bigger question.
Didn't you find a video explaining how to use the three seashells, Lloyd?
Yes.
Demolition Man is when he wakes up in 2032.
Yeah. Oh, we've got a fair bit of years.
We're not too far away then. We're not too far away. Right, well anyway.
That's when Wesley Snipes' career will come back on.
And he'll have finished paying his taxes. So, Star Wars Hobby Weekend next weekend.
Looking forward to it.
We're going to have an entire weekend dedicated to our love of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a fun weekend, really enjoying the whole Star Wars experience. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try, I believe, either on the Friday night or the Saturday night, we're going to be doing XLBS Live.
That'll be interesting.
That will be fun. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Cult of Games member, you may want to tune in for that. So we're going to be doing XLBS Live either on the Friday night or the Saturday night. But the rest of the weekend, we're going to be live blogging. We're going to have some live streams of hobby. Each of us is getting involved in our own mini hobby project. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be undertaking something 3D printing related for the Star Wars weekend. I'm not sure what it is yet. I'm still working on it, but I'm going to come up with something kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Jono is taking a Star Wars toy and working it up from the basics of a Star Wars toy to become a cool Legion model. Mm-hmm. Justin is going to be MDFing over the weekend.
I'm MDFing?
You are MDFing over the weekend. You know,
is this the foreground battle kiwi stuff?
No, you're going to be working on the Knights of Dice stuff that came in from Recon 63 from Australia.
Okay, awesome.
So we have some cool Star Wars stuff that's come all the way from the Wizard of Oz, as I like to call him.
Also, myself and Jerry have been diving back into the gameplay, playing about with the new skirmish rules. So if anybody's looking to play during the weekend, you can tap either one of us.
Very good. Jerry, you have the option to pick a project if you so desire. Yeah, and yeah, Lloydie, yeah, you do too if you so desire to pick a small project.
Yeah, it's called video editing.
There you go.
Okay. Well, are you going to re-edit the Aridge?
No, I'll just be editing videos.
On the topic of re-edits of the Aridge Tridge, if you have never seen it, okay, there is some dude out there who has re-edited the original trilogy he's been working on. I know Star Wars A New Hope, he created my absolute favorite version of it because he redid all the colorization and filled in all the gaps and stuff. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Ben, if you can, or Justin, either of you, if you can look it up. It's a dude, what would you call it? It's like A New Hope Remastered or something like that. Now, I know he wasn't far off the last time I looked on Empire Strikes Back. I don't know if he ever got it fixed, but he does these side-by-side renders of the original version, the cinematic release, and then his version, where it's all been remastered, recolored, and it's incredible.
Is it a guy called Harmy?
Yes.
Does that ring a bell?
That's him.
Harmy's despecialized edition?
That's him. The one
he's done a good job on the likes of...
I'm not sure that doesn't ring a bell for me.
No, that's it. I don't know where you've seen it, but that's it.
Who have you got?
I've got some guy, Zuniga, YouTube.
No.
Have you seen the side-by-sides of Cloud City and stuff? I think he's done a good job on that.
Yes.
Well.
Yeah. So it's...
Essentially, he's gone back and he's taken out all of the nonsense that Lucas put in.
Yes.
And remastered them because Lucas has never released the original cinematic version. The closest we got was a few years ago, and the reason Harmy started it was even that he deliberately screwed with it in places. So when he released when they did a limited edition set where they released the cinematic version, it turned out it was just the laser cut version that had been cut down, pan and scanned, and then put up again. So he hadn't fixed the sound. And it actually cut stuff out of the picture and things because Lucas hates anybody going near it. So Harmy's been going back and using Laserdisc versions and video versions and getting the best shots he can for specific things and putting them back together.
Well, I don't know if that's the same one as I'm watching because I'm pretty sure the one I watched, this guy managed to find some of the... lost footage of the Biggs meeting, where Luke and Biggs actually met on Yavin before they went off to fight on the Death Star. Mm. Biggs got killed.
Yes.
Okay.
On the Death Star.
Yeah, but none of us cared at the time because we hadn't seen.
There's footage of him back on Tatooine.
There's footage of him back on Tatooine as well, when he's going off to the academy. Mm. But I'm pretty sure that he edited and remastered in the Biggs footage and stuff as well.
That's cool.
It's a wonderful because there's nothing gimmicky in it. Do you know what I mean? He's not doing the weird CGI monsters walking in front of the screen that just look weird and break the immersion of the whole movie. There's none of that kind of stuff in it. It's just really beautifully recolored. You know, the lightsabers actually track properly, and he's
used. So he's just being very true to it.
Very true to it, and just doing what it did really, really well. Mm. So even the likes of the Snowspeeders in Empire Strikes Back, were transparent. Mm. Okay, so you could actually see the AT-ATs through the hull of the snowspeeder from the internal shots, okay? The other thing is that you couldn't... snowspeeders have air brakes on the back. Those air brakes didn't move in the original movie. So what he did is, in his version of it, it's all remastered, recolored, so it's not see-through. And as you're actually watching it, when it cuts to the forward-facing shot of Skywalker and stuff, you can actually see the air brakes moving properly.
That's cool.
To guide the snow speeder
turn,
and stuff around. It's
air brakes.
So it's
that's cool.
He also managed to work out the exact temperature of a Tauntaun.
Okay.
It's lukewarm.
I hit you.
Anyway.
So bad. There's no Christmas cracker jokes yet.
So join us for the Star Wars weekend.
Have you seen the battle that someone put up on YouTube where Darth Vader is fighting Obi-Wan?
Yes.
And he's cut it. It's much more action-packed.
Is it?
It's actually not bad.
Yeah.
I just remember the Battlefront 2 gif where it's, I think, Luke fighting on the battlefield and then just an AT-AT's foot comes down and splats him. It's from a video game, not from a movie. Calm down.
Ben, let's tell us the news.
Whatever.
Cool, yeah. So the first little bit of news that we're going to be diving into is for the World of Warhammer 40,000. And this was some stuff that came out of the open day that was held last weekend.
Yes.
At Warhammer World. And so the first bit of interesting stuff Woo-hoo! Was a look at what's ahead for the Sisters of Battle.
Yes.
Because leading the way for them, we have the Procession of the Triumph of St. Catherine, which is going to be one of the big sort of iconic diorama pieces that they're going to be making for the Sisters of Battle, which is going to be coming out.
And can you make it big, Justin?
I can try.
Embiggen it.
Embiggened.
So this is based on a piece of artwork from the new Codex. You may have seen it in some of the previews we've shown off in the past, but looking pretty cool. I imagine a lot of people are going to be taking some of the sort of individual elements of this and using it to create their own leaders for squads and that kind of thing as well. But it's like a nice, interesting sort of take on the artwork from the Codex.
It's a very strange looking pizza.
Past the collection plate.
It's got
right.
on it, so.
What is that that's on that?
Collect coins.
Are they coins or is that a collection plate? Is it?
Yeah.
It's the geld, I believe. Yeah, like the collected geld. Yeah, but yeah, look, I think it looks kind of cool. You know, it's very ostentatious and big, and it's probably not very practical on the battlefield, but it looks pretty good.
So. I am dreading anyone trying to transport that to a tournament. That
Why?
Looks like it's going to break. Look at all the little flying cherubs up around the top.
Just break the babies off.
Yeah, just clip all the babies off. It'll look amazing. So it will.
I quite like it though.
Is it actually a gaming
you
piece
only,
then?
You only
it
like,
is a gaming piece, yeah. isn't it?
You only like it, Justin, because you can't see past the wings and stuff. There's wee Charlies all over those. You just can't see them.
Calm down, Lloyd. Calm down.
Actually, this dude here up in the top left-hand corner, Justin, has a goatee. He looks exactly like you if you look very closely at him.
Yeah? No.
He is.
No.
He's probably better endowed, but he does
Ouch.
Look like...
Ouch. Hang on. What the hell? I mean, like, low blow directly below the belt? What the hell?
Well, look at the length of the thing that he has to hide it behind, Justin.
We'll have to attach him to it somehow.
No, it's... I like it. It is a gaming piece, though, Ben, yeah?
It is, yeah, so it'll have rules for you to use it in-game, as they tend to do with all these big pieces and stuff. So
It's odd to see so many individual miniatures on the one base, isn't it?
Yeah.
What one thing that was brought up actually in the comments is that it's been really interesting seeing that Games Workshop have been creating these larger pieces like this, because in the past, they do a lot of single miniatures, and then they just expect us to make our own dioramas and things. And I think a lot of people were like, this is cool, but maybe if these had all been done as individual models, which I'm sure you could just do, as I said earlier, and just put them to their own bases, you could then use it to create the diorama if you wanted to later on.
Well, it strikes me, right, if you bring a picture up again, right?
Yep, not a problem.
Now, I'm happy enough for that to be a single piece. It's probably a command piece. It's probably as much about its command and control that it adds to the battlefield as anything else. But there's a dudette there at the front with an amazing looking sword and looks like they know how to use it.
Yeah.
Okay. Surely with the number of individuals on that base, you would almost expect them to be able to run amok and go into a charge or something. Do you know what I mean? I wonder, does it, will it just feel like a very staticky kind of a thing on the tabletop? Will it feel a bit convoluted moving it around and it not having the ability for bits to kind of run off and do their own thing?
I don't think so, because that's a dead person there that they're protecting.
Is it a dead person?
Yeah, they're carrying the body of the saint. So in that respect, it's very similar to the old Bretonian Grail Knight reliquary, where they're carrying a dead knight. So they wouldn't go running off and leave
they
her.
They would never leave the dead body.
Yeah, it's an honor guard.
And in that respect, it's very similar to how, similar to the Crusades, people who've seen Kingdom of Heaven will remember, you know, the leper king in his lovely silver armor and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
In real life, the last battle, that he attended, he was just being dragged around in a cart because he had no limbs and he could barely move and he was one breath away from dying. And it was more, there's the king, he's on the battlefield, he was a symbol. And, yeah. So he wasn't leading any charges, he wasn't sitting on a horse by himself.
Was
and
he then, dead?
No, he's still alive.
He actually lived through it, did he? Yeah,
it's not he like died LC, after, they propped him up on a horse.
But this idea that they've got a something to protect and they're bringing it with them and it's more of a symbol.
Yeah, than it's an not actual, unusual.
It's not. And it fits very nicely in with the whole faith of that theme behind the sisters of being, very religious. So I quite like it.
Yeah, it's cool stuff then. It's cool stuff. It's nice to have it historically grounded in that sense, with the idea of...
the idea of protecting
well, and all
okay,
that.
Yeah, obviously...
Ignore that, but yeah. But, yeah, but the idea actually of bring holy relics with them or bringing an actual, a saint's bones or that sort of thing.
Because if you take the Crusades as an example, am I right in thinking that they had... splinters from the cross and nails of Christ and
they carried the true cross.
Yeah,
not just splinters of it. They had it as far as they were concerned.
Yeah,
so it was.
Didn't they pick up new relics about as they went as well?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of them.
three spears. The spear that the centurion stuck into Jesus.
Spear of Longinus.
So three of them arrived back post-crusade, so everybody got one.
What? Mm. The spear of what, Justin? Longinus, I believe is the name. Isn't there a spear of destiny as well?
Same thing.
Is it the same thing?
Yeah. So anyway, they picked up new ones on the way, but the things like the true cross passed back. It was captured by the Muslims and then it was bartered back later on whenever Christian forces got something out. So relics and bodies and all of these things. Of it.
Yeah, and even to this day, I have visited the head of Oliver Plunkett.
Yeah, in Dublin.
It was in Drogheda or Dundalk or one of them. It's halfway. It's at the halfway mark.
Must be Drogheda.
I think it's Drogheda. What they have is they have a head in a golden box.
Right.
And
so you don't see the head.
You do see the head.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Oh, it's a severed head. A mummified severed head.
There'd be no point in traveling all that distance to check out some bloke's
head. And not
head.
Get head at the end of it, yeah.
And it's not, not get to see it.
So, Justin, I will take you to Drogheda for some head some of these days, right? God. And we will go down and you will get an education, man. I'm pretty sure I've also seen a severed hand, a saint's severed hand. Yeah. Like the bodies of saints... this is all over the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know. There are like reliquaries everywhere.
Yeah. So it's,
there's even I think it's a museum somewhere in France that claims to have Napoleon's bits.
Which bits? The bits you clipped off?
The bits that someone clipped off.
And did they clip them off?
I have no idea, but they claim to have it preserved.
Isn't it amazing that that would be a piece of knowledge that would be right at the forefront? Was that right on the tip of your tongue, was it?
No. No, right. I was just thinking about it, and it was just like, wait, I saw a documentary about that crap.
More of a cockumentary, I suppose.
it just came into your head there, didn't it?
All right, let's move on very quickly.
Yep.
So what else did the workshop reveal for 2020?
So we also got to have a look at some stuff that they'd put forward for the multi-part sort of Sitters Repentia kit that they've been doing for the Sister Battle and the Adepta Sororitas going forward. So a lot of people will know the ones that you get in the sort of limited edition set, but they've also been showing off some of the additional options and things. So you've got lots of different sort of head options and some legs with bionics and that kind of stuff as well. So there's some extra bits and pieces there for the Sisters of Battle, because they're going to be building on this range throughout the rest of next year.
What's the story of these guys? What's the story behind these leotard-wearing dudes?
They've done something that they need to atone for.
Mm. So they don't get any armor then? They have to go into battle?
Yeah. Repentia, as in to repent.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a nice sister with...
I like the swords.
The eviscerators.
Mm-hmm.
And they just gently nudge them forward so that they may atone for their sins by dying horribly for the Emperor.
And that sister at the front whips them into shape then,
Very much so. But to be fair, if they've already got to this stage, they probably don't need the motivation.
And did they previously, they were previously normal sisters in battle armor then?
Yeah.
And
that's why they've got all the
little
sockets. Plugs.
Yep. Plugs and sockets and stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm quite impressed they let them keep the bionic limbs. I would have replaced those all just with peg legs and stuff. They're expensive. Keep them for real people.
I'm going to get in here to have a...
How close do you need to be, Warren?
I love the sculpting on this, because you know this is not just a miniature painted with a black skin tone. When you go into the actual face, the facial structure and everything, it really, really suits the paint scheme on that. So you know, big thumbs up to the sculptor on that one.
Yeah,
that's a lovely, lovely bit of work. I love that.
I'm not as fond of the muscle tone on them.
Do you think too much muscle?
Yeah. If you were to take the heads off, even if you would leave those heads on because you can't see what the face is like.
Yeah.
If I didn't know that they were sisters of battle, I wouldn't be able to tell if they were male or female. Especially this one here. Just looks too bulky. And then when you compare it to ones in armor,
I don't know.
That muscle mass doesn't fit the armor.
There's a Russian, or no, maybe it's Japanese. See, they're Japanese, Chinese, or Russian lady who looks just like that.
Oh, there's loads of them. Oh, yeah. But if you compare that muscle tone to the armored sisters, there's no way those limbs fit in their armor.
Okay,
well, if I quickly scroll up here to the first image. So there's your sister there. You can see some of the armor. And I see what Jerry's saying there.
That's not a great picture to see it from. But the models themselves are very lithe and they've got very thin limbs. And then you could fit... you couldn't fit any of those limbs in any of the sisters' armor.
Okay, that's going to be a difficult point for me to come back to or to come back on, because I was going to say one of the things we've got to keep in mind here is that they're bound to have went through a process somewhat similar to a Space Marine. No, they don't go through that whole gene CD kind of process at all.
That's why they're only toughness 3 in the rules, because they don't get anything. They don't get the carapace under their skin or anything. They just get plugged.
Right,
their power armor.
Okay,
and then it just does the heavy lifting.
Well, in that case, then I wonder why they opted then.
I don't know, because the metal ones that I have at home don't have that massive chunky thing. Now it might just be because they've changed sculptor.
Yeah,
it's probably it.
So it's not a case of begrudging them having all the muscles. Yeah, have the muscles all you want, but if they don't fit in the armor that they
came out of,
then it seems like
the immersion a little.
It seems like an odd design choice, doesn't it? So, okay, what's next?
So as well as the look at the battle sisters and what they were getting, there was also a new flyer for the Adeptus Mechanicus, and this one has kind of divided opinion again, as most things do from Games Workshop. This is called the Archaeopter, and this is their new flyer that they're going to be using. I kind of like it. I think it looks pretty cool. I'm not entirely sure that it looks like it's something out of Warhammer 40,000, but I really like the look of it, and it kind of gives an idea of exactly the kind of strange, weird stuff that the Adeptus Mechanicus have been working along in the background.
When I'm able to stop thinking about the very famous movie Chitty Chitty, Chitty Bang Bang. Bang.
Well, let me put two other movies in your mind then.
Hudson Hawk.
Oh no, Oblivion. His airplane that he flies around in that.
Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't have wings.
Haven't seen Oblivion.
Yeah. And
bring up a picture of Oblivion.
And Slipstream.
Okay.
Slipstream, yes.
What's Slipstream? Bring up Slipstream as well. Then.
With okay. Mark Hamill.
Mark
Hamill's a bounty hunter.
It's a really nice look. It looks fantastic.
I love it.
I don't think it fits the Adeptus Mechanicus, though.
How come?
The Adeptus Mechanicus are on the cutting edge of technology.
Yes.
Supposedly they're the ones that they went to and went, we need flying tanks for our Space Marines.
That's why they're called.
And then you've got that, and it actually looks like it's got pistons to flap the wings. And you're going, that's clearly not how that works.
Well, there's the first one Lloyd's on about.
If you click this one here, Justin, yeah. I think what we're seeing is the dragonfly kind of.
Yeah. No, not that. Go back. Yeah. See that one there. Click that.
That's
tiny as well. You should do big images when you do these searches. Mm-hmm. Big images. Yeah, it's that bubbly look and the wings.
Yeah.
Again, I thought about Slipstream and the airplane and that. Go to Slipstream. Sort of a bubbled head.
None of them have
flipping flappy wings.
Oh, well, it's the flappy wings, but
Something. Look up, I seen it on Facebook. Look up Batman's helicopter.
From the 1960s.
Yeah. I see when someone put that on Facebook.
Okay, so Batman's helicopter has flappy wings.
But when the Adeptus Mechanicus can make the Titans, can make repulsor tanks, the idea that the only way they can fly themselves is with flappy wings just seems wrong. I think it looks very...
I was going to say, I think the way that they've kind of tried to approach the design has potentially come from the idea of sort of seeing the Adeptus Mechanicus as like steampunky. And so they've tried to do something for their flyer that has that kind of steampunky element to it. I'm trying to tie in that idea of the sort of gothic world beyond you know, what you'd get on the battlefield. They're trying to make it so it's something that could potentially have been used as something for civilians maybe as well. So.
See, I look at that wing design and it just screams Dark Eldar to me, because you know they have the winged...
Oh, sure, actually, even worse than that, now you've said that, if you look for Dark Eldar Raider or Ravager, that is just the seal off one, isn't it?
Pretty much.
See, what I think I would do is just not model it with the wings.
I think without the wings. You know, like, I think with the wings it looks great. I just don't think it's the super technology.
I really like it.
I like it too. But I like it as it is.
But how does the wing thing really fit in with the faction? Aren't they supposed to be really high tech?
But maybe those wings are really high tech.
You mean like the Falcon?
I hope they're flame retardant.
Well, obviously they are.
What, flying over any fire? Oh no, my wing's on fire, crash.
Well, it wasn't made on Endor.
Right. I'm sure it'll work outdoors. So, I'm going to try and pitch this to you, okay? Mm. So I'm the AdMech that has come up with this design.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so I'm going to try and keep this as realistic as possible, Ben, okay?
Start talking in binary.
Okay. Dudes! I have found an STC that is really cool. It will give us a flyer called... What's it called again?
The Archaeopter.
The Archaeopter, dudes. Right?
Exterminate.
So the other ad mech across the table will go, well, what is the benefits of this monstrosity? And I will go, it works like a bug. So, think about this, right? Mm. We can shoot birds, right? There's people that can shoot birds. They go pigeon shooting. But I have never seen anybody go fly shooting or bee shooting. Because a fly or a bee would have a much more...
In that case, never Google salt shotgun. Which is made specifically to kill flies and bees and stuff when you can't be bothered swatting. You just sit there with your shotgun and just blast them with rock salt.
I don't understand where you were going with this. Anyway, are you trying to say it looks like a bee or it looks like a bird?
I'm trying to say that an insect would have flight properties that would be beyond what you would see with a normal flyer.
See, I don't know.
Because like a fly, Justin, when was the last time you and a fly had any kind of like interaction with one another?
Last time I had to kill one.
Right. Did you manage it?
Yes.
How long did it take you?
One swing with a tea towel.
One swing with a tea towel. I've got to make you a belt, 7 in one blow.
I remember that story. Right. I was trying to remember what that was.
Right. So, but have you ever been outfoxed by an insect?
No.
You must be a genius. You must be like the Mr. Miyagi of the Untabletop group.
What do you mean outfoxed by an insect?
Well, I don't mean he turned into a fox. I get
that we're not talking literal here.
Okay.
So how have you been outfoxed by an insect?
I have been outfoxed by insects where there's been like a fly or a bee or a wasp has been made its way into the room. And it has taken me quite some time to be able to either catch or kill it, because its reflexes are better. It has the ability to hover, move, and do maneuvers that no normal bird would be able to do.
I don't think that's how this flies.
You don't think it flaps its wings like an insect?
I would highly doubt it.
Oh, well.
Well, no, wait, look, because it has pistons. It has pistons. As if they can go up and down.
Are there any other pictures, or is this the only one they've revealed so far, Ben?
Any rocket boosters on the back of this thing?
That's the only teaser so far.
Oh, that's the only teaser. You've got some close-ups.
Ah.
Yeah.
There we go. Look, rocket boosters.
Yeah, so it has engines.
So it's only using the wings for direction then.
Yeah. Do you know what?
It's also got them on its legs, though, is the thing.
It's got flappy bits on its legs.
Yeah. That's why I'm wondering, because you can see it there between...
Oh, yes, it does.
But then it doesn't have a foot. It's got a hook. Okay. So I want to see other ways. Presumably they've got hanging upside down like bats or something and then launching.
I think it's worth me pointing out to the community now that I clearly have been talking utter shite on this. So, back to the drawing board on that.
Yeah.
I like it.
I
suppose if it... I expect it to have aero abilities beyond what you would see with a normal flyer for it to look like that. Mm. It may not. Maybe they just designed it like that because they thought it looked cool. That's fine. But it'd be cool if they have some kind of.
The worst thing you can do if you want to be good at flying is stick wings on something.
Why?
Because if you've got anti-grav type technologies and stuff like that, you don't stick a wing on it.
Yeah, but this is probably made by the regular AdMech and not Belisarius Call.
If you love it, you'll always put a ring on it or a wing on it.
Because, like, as jet fighters and stuff have progressed, we've got less and less wing, like, compared to the size of the bodies. Like, if you look at World War II aircraft, the wings are big compared to the size of the body. But as we've got more and more sophisticated, now we're even evolving into the entire aircraft is basically just one molded wing.
Like a tic-tac.
It's not really beneficial to have too many sticky outfits.
As Justin will attest to.
I'm saying nothing.
Okay, right. What else did they show off? We're okay, past the flyer. We're all stumped by the flyer. We don't know where we are.
Okay, so to finish things off for 40K, one of the big things they talked about was that there's going to be three new books for the Psychic Awakening. So there's going to be The Ritual of the Damned, The Greater Good, which I assume would bring Tau into the equation, or Tau, if you want to say it the proper way now. And also there's The Saga of the Beast, which is the final one, which I'm kind of crossing my fingers for some awesome Space Wolf stuff for.
You see, I don't know. I'm thinking either Orc or Tyranid.
Well, see, I think it's going to be Space Wolves versus one of those factions. I think that's going to be the big thing, because they've always done kind of like a versus thing within the books. And they've already done the Tyranids as part of Blood of Baal, so maybe we'll see some.
So do we think that Ritual of the Damned will be Legion of the Damned?
Possibly.
It could well be something to do with the Legion of the Damned.
Greater Good is clearly going to be the Tau.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we just
it's the Orcs.
You think Saga of the Beast is the Orcs?
Because they've used it before for Gazgul, being the Great Beast and stuff like that, and Orcs.
That'd be cool.
Ritual of the Damned could also be either Night Lords or perhaps Alpha Legion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's our lot.
Yeah, the final little bit of a thing was that they also put forward a little bit of a teaser for what they're doing on the Warhammer animations front. Because obviously one of the big things they talked about earlier in the year was that they were going to be doing a whole bunch of animations projects both within the worlds of Warhammer 40,000 and Age of Sigmar. And so they put together a little bit of a reel which shows off some of the stuff that's going to be available next year, with the sort of announcement at the end of the trailer that the sort of big reveal for what they're doing for the Blood Angels sort of animation project is going to be coming in January.
It's got the weirdest music on it for a 40K video.
It does have the weirdest music.
Yeah. There's no grimdark music to it. It's all sort of commercial pop music.
I liked it.
It's very aspirational music.
I actually quite like the Saturday morning TV the type cartoons clips that were in it.
I haven't looked at.
Have you not seen it yet?
Yeah. You've got some from the kids novel series. Yes. You've got one that looks almost anime, and then you've got the CGI one in there as well.
Yeah, I'll take the first and the last. So I'll leave you to the...
Oh, I'll enjoy it, because it looks like the Night Lords are getting involved in that one.
Yeah, but the first one, it had a like Saturday morning TV, like Ulysses kind of power extreme, kind of a centurion thing going on about it. I thought, yeah, that's kind of cool. I like that. Right. Slaves to Darkness is coming out this weekend.
Yeah, so this weekend is the launch of the set that we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks. So the Slaves to Darkness Start Collecting set will be available from today. So you're about to go and order that. Maybe from store.ontabletop.com. Who knows?
Love that plug, Ben. Love that plug.
Always good. Yeah. And then as well as that, you've got the new Battle Tome, a whole bunch of new War Scroll cards, and they're also going to be bringing out a set of endless spells for you to use with your Slave to Darkness as well. Ooh, so cool. for those people that don't know, the Slave to Darkness are those that haven't particularly chosen a Chaos God to worship, but instead are all under the thrall and worship of Lord Archeon himself, the ever-chosen King of Chaos. Some really awesome-looking updated models for this range.
Is this box going to be a limited edition box, or is this going to be a start collecting?
No, this is a proper full-on start collecting set. So.
Yeah, but is it going to be available all year then if it's the full-on start collecting
set? Yeah.
Set?
This is it.
It's not one of these Christmas battle boxes.
Not one of these Christmas battle boxes. This is the new starter box. I am so psyched for this box, because if you remember, this box is my win-win.
Yes.
Okay? So either the models are bigger than the previous Chaos models, in which case... it's win, because they're big, chunky, cool-looking models. Or they're the same-ish size as the previous Chaos models, in which case it's win, because I get to integrate them into the existing kind of Chaos-y army that I've got. Because I love the Cav. I think the Cav is just awesome.
They're gorgeous.
It is awesome. I love. I just love the movement in them. There's so much more movement. I'm not sure about the big white dick-looking lizard thing at the front. I'm not entirely convinced on that. I think a bigger. I just don't know.
Bigger warhorse.
I don't know. I just
wait until you have it in your hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So two of the things I was going to say actually about this that I thought was really cool is that I was looking at this, and because the aesthetic is so close to what we've had in the past from the Chaos Warriors, as you were saying,
yes,
I really like the idea of using these to build on something like an 8th edition Warhammer Fantasy Army, because you know the rules are still out there, you can still play the game, and I'd love to integrate them into the mix. But then I was thinking about the fact that, you know, you've got the Marauders are still that very, very old kit at the moment, but obviously, as you can see in this new story as well, they're going to be using a lot of the warbands from Warcry for you to use in your Games of Age of Sigmar as well as part of the Slaves to Darkness army. So you could use them in replacement for the Marauders. The other cool thing I thought about this as well is that one of the really awesome things about Chaos Space Marines as a whole in Warhammer 40,000 is that they all have that kind of sort of archaic, evil Chaos Warrior look to them. And I reckon you could do some really, really good conversion work on these models for Age of Sigmar and use them in 40K, which I think would be pretty awesome.
Possibly.
That is a possibility. This is quite a big Chaos release when you look at the amount of repacks that they've got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they've doubled the size of the Warcry warbands within those boxes as well, so they're the actual size that you'd need them to be if you were using them as units. So, which obviously means that they're duplicating all the sculpts in there, but there you go.
That's okay.
Yeah,
I'm not too concerned about that, you know, because the Warcry sculpts are lovely. You know, it's that's the one for me. Because I was about to say, I just none of them particularly jumped out at me. But then, the untamed beasts. Yeah.
The others are very specific to a god, even if they say they're not.
Yeah.
Wait, before you go past that, it's a shame though they've included that. Click that again. That's
the goat. Goat.
They know that same sculpt twice.
Yeah, but they've done that now in all of them.
Yeah, all of them are doubled.
It's just doubled the sprue.
But you can really use this to sort of theme your warband to a specific tribe. You know, if you get multiples of this.
Yes, but just, it's cool. It's just lovely looking models, that particular one. So if I was going to replace them Marauders with anything, it would be the Untamed Beasts.
Yeah.
And then the Endless Spells, can we get a look at them and see what, they, what they've come up with? Because I'm still a big fan of the concept of the Endless Spells. Just the three of them, is there, Ben, or is there more?
That's all of them that are included in the pack to begin with. I don't know. Maybe they'll do some more stuff in the future, but that's what we're getting so far. Effectively, it looks like we're getting something that's very similar to what we've seen in the past, where you get one that's a little bit more of a defensive spell, so the one at the top. Mm-hmm. You've got one that's more aggressive and attacky, and then you've got one that's almost going to have like an aura effect to it.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I think I can guess which is which.
Yes, I think I can guess which, to be fair, is a good thing on the tabletop because you want to be able to easily identify it.
Yeah,
I just don't find any of them particularly jumping out at me as, wow. Do you know what I mean?
It's the flying portal head vomiting out fire.
It's okay. It's okay, but none of them really jump out at me to make me go, wow.
Coming up to go, bleh,
bleh, bleh. Notice the studio paper has made the rookie mistake of doing the hottest thing furthest away.
Yes.
They've got it right on this one.
Yes.
They've remembered heat goes to smoke.
Oh, yes.
But this one's going that. So he's not actually spitting.
Sucky thing.
He's vacuuming up the flames.
Yes.
So maybe that's. Maybe that's what he does.
Well, unless he's spitting out a fireball that's landing and exploding, is the only way that would work.
I think he's sucking it.
I think he's
sucking up the lava.
All right,
he's just sucking up the lava. Yeah, look, they're okay, but I'm not looking at them and going,
"Wow, must have."
You know,
you're still after the big chompy teeth again, aren't you?
Oh, I love the big chompy teeth. Love the big chompy teeth. We're going to Rohan this weekend as well, aren't we? Ben, what's up on the Rohan front?
Yeah, so for the final bit of Games Workshop news, there's going to be the release of the new War in Rohan book, which is coming out to support everyone playing Middle-Earth Strategy Battle Game. This was teased quite a while ago, but now it's going to be finally out for everyone to use and play around with. And as well as the book, which will contain a whole bunch of new rules, scenarios, and all sorts of different bits and pieces for you to play out your battles across Rohan against Saruman and the Uruk-hai, you've also got the model kit, which will include Saruman, both on foot and mounted, with the Palantir as well, that you might know from Orthanc, and also Grima Wormtongue there with a new sculpt as well, all of these in plastic, by the way, drawing his dagger and, you know, sniveling behind his tissue as he seems to do all the time. A little bit like me when I've got a cold. But yeah, I'm also in the furs as well. Maybe I'm green and
warm. You look just like it today, Ben. Mm-hmm. Ah! You get some sunlight.
Exactly, yeah. But yes,
is the terrain coming out as well?
Yes, so as well as that, there's also going to be the new modular terrain. So this pack is going to be available as what I'm assuming is going to be called the Rohan Stronghold Kit. That's what was in the article anyway. And it will include a whole bunch of houses, the sort of watchtowers that you see there, and also the palisade walls that you can see in the background. So if you're going to be building a little bit of a Rohan Stronghold on the tabletop, you've got some options there. I don't know if they're all going to be available separately as well as within this box set, but it's pretty awesome stuff. And hopefully it'll all be done in plastic, which would be really cool.
So it'll be limited.
Rather than done as resin and as part of like Forge World or something.
So. It will be limited. Let me, I'd put that out. No, this will be the kind of stuff you'll want to get it.
Similar to what Lake Town had.
Yeah, you'll want to get it while you can, because sooner or later it'll end up direct only in small, awkward kind of
boxings,
packages. Yeah. So I like the tower and the palisade. Mm. I think that's kind of cool. Is there anything historical you could get away with using that? You know, it's or does it have a design aspect to it that would just make it look odd?
The palisade's fine. Don't know.
Palisade's fine. Yeah. Well, if you lose
probably,
the horse
get away
heads
with the housing. Mm. Yeah, the housing and stuff could be used in the Dark Ages maybe as well. So
rip the heads off. Yeah.
Or it's just cool or just stuff in
place. Just keep those on actually. Yeah,
just accept the aesthetic of it and go, that's what they're into, the people.
No,
I mean
that's fine, you're grand with that. Because even Viking houses had stuff like that. But the tower itself would be a bit weird.
Mostly like dragon heads and stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know, if you cut the top horse's heads off and cut it down to where the spikes are, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Cut the heads off. On the tower. Leave them on the buildings.
You'd lose your
fine
big,
on the buildings.
You'd lose your big dong in the middle there.
That's grand.
I think we'd be okay.
Oh, I didn't even see the bell end. That's awesome.
So, nice. Mm-hmm. Right. Does that wrap us up on our GW stuff, yeah?
Yes, that's everything for Games Workshop.
Coolio, because now we can talk about Angry Joe and the Street Fighter update.
Oh, hello.
Ben, fill us in, man.
Yeah, so we talked to Angry Joe a couple of years ago now when he was, I think it was back in 2018 when the Kickstarter launched for Street Fighter the Miniatures game. And one of the things he's been doing over the last couple of weeks and months is putting out update videos on the progress that he's coming towards finishing off the game and getting it out to all of the backers. So one of the big things that he's been focusing on in the last couple of videos is looking at the model quality, because people that back the Kickstarter and, you know, other people out there might know that all the stuff you're getting for Street Fighter is actually all pre-painted. So he's been going back and forward with the people over in China and also the, you know, Capcom over in Japan and in America, and trying to get everything finalized on that front. So he goes through all the different sculpts, showing all the different levels that he's been going through and the painting techniques that they've been using, and basically refining everything so that it matches exactly what Capcom and obviously he wants in terms of quality for the game. The most recent video as well actually looked at things a little bit more detail on the mechanical front. So one of the big things they've done is they've redone the rulebook and updated it. And so the latest version of that is available for you to download and have a read through so that you can get your head around the mechanics and see how the game plays out as well on that front. And also feed back to them so they can also make the final version, you know, nice and pretty for, you know, the start of 2020. Because one of the big things he's been focusing on is trying to get everything done on the production front and make sure everything is signed off so that he can actually start everything in the beginning of next year and get it out to all the Kickstarter backers as well.
Happy days.
If you back the Kickstarter, you've got some options there.
So. Yeah, I really want to get a go with this game.
Oh, I'm excited about this one too. It's I'm really excited to see where he goes with the pre-paints. These will be pre-paints like we have not seen in this industry so far.
Any pictures or just the videos at this point? Because I can see them in the thumbnail, but
run one of the videos there, Justin, kind of flick through it and see if we can see. All
right. I can give you a kind of like rundown as well of it. One of the big things that they've talked about is a lot of the stuff.
That's the rule book. Don't play that one. Play the other video. Sorry, Ben. Scroll down.
That's right.
Here.
Yeah, that one.
Okay. One of the big focuses with the miniatures is that a lot of the stuff is all around the idea of using tone and color and exactly trying to get the colors right for each of the characters. But then one of the additional elements to that is using things like shades and stuff in order to bring out things like muscle texture and also make sure that the actual clothing looks right on the characters to match the sort of versions from the video games. The other big thing is a lot of the use of the sort of clear plastic that they've been using across the models to create them sort of power effects and the Hadoukens and that kind of thing as well. So, and also facial details have been a big thing for him. So one of the big focuses has been sort of looking at the idea of like Ryu's face and trying to make it look like he doesn't look like a derpy man.
Yeah, well, we're seeing Blanka here.
Yeah. So as you look through the videos, he actually goes into a lot of quite a lot of detail. So it's really worth watching this if you want to have a look at the sort of process that he goes through, because it's kind of interesting, you know, watching that and then hearing what he says about having to deal with the licensing from Capcom and that thing as well, because you know it can be a rocky road. So
yeah,
very cool. These are wicked looking. Yeah,
they are very cool. Yeah, I really like the way that Sagat and stuff have come out. It's really cool. So yeah.
I'm just impressed. They've got the eyes on the eyes.
Yeah. Isn't it? No, yeah. It's one thing looking at prototypes. Mm-hmm. It'll be another thing when it comes to mass production. That'll be the real challenge here, is seeing how they can keep this the
quality, consistency
is exactly the word I'm looking for. Consistency across an actual full production run. But if they look at that.
I mean, theoretically, they should be able to.
Have the American tattoo on those shoulders?
Pass. You're into details now. I couldn't tell you.
I imagine yes, because otherwise Capcom wouldn't have passed it. Mm.
Yeah, if it's on the models, then it's probably on the character in the video game.
That's cool. That's some collection.
Because if you think, if you look at some other like collectible models in that scale, they can definitely do it. Because... Lucas fired out stuff for Clone Wars years ago, and it's that sort of size, that sort of coloration, the detail is all there, but you were paying a premium for the miniatures. I don't know what this is going to weigh in at cost-wise, and that's where you'll hit those speed bumps, because if they're having to produce so many for a certain cost, that will more negatively impact it.
One of the things to just mention quickly is that the actual miniatures game itself was a Kickstarter exclusive. So everything that came out was available for that. There will be, and he hopes, a select few extra boxes maybe that they can sell at conventions and that kind of thing. Mm. But he's also got his eye on a second printing of the game if everything runs smoothly. So if you do like what you're seeing here and you like Street Fighter, just keep an eye out, because I'm sure he'll be updating people on that in the future.
There you go. Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye out on that. When we get a chance, let's reach out to Angry Joe and see if we can get an update from the horse's mouth.
Street Fighter, we could actually be good at.
Yes.
Rather than having to have reactions.
We don't have to have reactions.
Like a fly.
Rangers of Shadowdeep, the deluxe edition, has been announced coming for in 2020. Now, this is Joe McCulloch's game, yeah?
Yeah, so this is Joe McCullen, who created Frostgrave, that everyone will know, and he's also working on Oathmark, which is coming out next year from North Star as well, and Osprey. But this is his look at sort of repackaging Rangers of Shadowdeep, which is a solo/cooperative game that you play on the tabletop with your team of rangers venturing out on playing through scenarios. And so it's got a really sort of deep role-playing game focused everything about it. And I love the idea of it being a solo cooperative experience as well. The new deluxe version of the book is going to be sold by both Modiphius and North Star, with a few different options here and there. But the main sort of focus of the game itself and the sort of rule book will be exactly the same, where you'll get all the stuff from the original main book, which was available through DriveThruRPG to begin with. But this new version also comes with some additional stuff in there. So you've got Burning Light, which was the first expansion campaign supplement, which has been added into the book. And there's also a few additional character customization options from one of the later books called Temple of Madness, which has also been fed into the mix as well. So if you're really interested in playing some solo cooperative stuff on the tabletop, this is one that you might want to go and check out in the new year. So,
happy days. Fireforge Games have some new Forgotten World heroes out.
Yeah, so this is some more stuff from them for Forgotten World, which was their sort of fantasy world that they created, but you know, using a whole range of new plastic kits. So they had the Northern Kingdoms and they had the Living Dead as well. And this is their look at a couple of the new heroes that you can pick up for use in the game as well. So you've got, and I'll go through the list here, you've got Alyard the Youngest, Orphan the Druid, which is basically Merlin. I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
You've got Venkalt the Soul Reaper and Zaquia the Necromancer as well. So you've got four new characters to play around with there. Obviously the two sort of martial heroes, I've got mounted versions and foot versions. And considering that, you know, Forgotten World is out there and also a plethora of other fantasy games as well, these would be a pretty good mix for you to throw in as sort of leaders and characters and things for those kind of games. And also your skirmishing ones as well.
It's an awesome, awesome looking Merlin.
Do you know what I like? Mm. I like the fact that the undead aren't covered in bat wings.
Yes.
And you'd like that.
Yes.
No bat wings. I could actually buy this. Because I have a load of Batwing ones from Games Workshop sitting in a box that I never built.
Because they're covered in Batwing.
Because they're covered in Batwings.
Yeah.
It just bugged me.
Very cool set.
It drove me batty.
Twisted have a new gang out. The Scotland Yard Clockwork Constabulary, Justin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is the world of Twisted by Demented Games. And this is one that I know that Dawn and Gianna really, really like. They love their sort of steampunk aesthetics and that kind of thing. And so it was really nice to see them doing a new, inventive and fascinating looking set. And they always do sort of interesting tweaks on kind of what we know and love from Victoriana. And so this one is a little bit of a take on all the stuff from that kind of period as well, where you've got Inspector Aberline there, Sergeant Clark, and the Wheeled Bobby Constables, which I think are some of the coolest steampunk models I think I've ever seen. I really love their sort of aesthetic that they've gone for with them. And the guy's got the handcuffs attached to the side of it as well. And you can just kind of imagine a ruffian running down the street, trying to drag the Wheeled Constable along with him as it's sort of bouncing on the cobbles and stuff. And this is just a sort of another chance for us to look at Twisted as a model range, really, because they've done some amazing stuff with this. And it's got a really nice sort of deep underground following for the game as well. And hopefully we'll get a chance to, you know, look at it in a bit more detail and stuff. And I'd love to hear actually people who've played the game. And it's a little bit like what we've said before for the likes of things like Bushido and Deep Wars and Shadow Sea. I really want to hear from people who've played the game and, you know, really delved into it rules-wise, because I want to see, learn a little bit more about how it plays and that kind of thing, because the models look absolutely fantastic. And they'd be good for hobbyists to pick up as well as just gamers.
They look seriously good fun to paint.
Yeah, they like, the model range is... Yeah. Insanely good.
All really well defined. And if you go down to the wheelie guys,
Chortle and the wheelies.
Yeah.
That's all I was thinking.
I love the combination, because you've got like.
Hey, old little old lady.
Yeah, you've got rubber, you've got metal, you've got glowing lights, you've got clubs, you've got a whole range of different
Trunctions, Lloyd. Trunctions.
Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah. I absolutely love this stuff. I was talking to Twisted a little while ago, and hopefully they're going to be sending us.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
Star cool. Setting rules through so we can have a butcher's at them.
Cool.
So it's got to come all the way from New Zealand, I believe.
Oh, wow.
So
I was going to say, one of the other cool things about the stuff that these guys do, and it's not the case with all of their models selection, but they do have options for buying a lot of this stuff in both metal and resin. So depending on the type of material you like, you can go and check everything out and see what you think. So.
You should check out Mary Poppins. She's flying along with a steam-powered umbrella, dropping bombs on people from her bag. It's amazing.
Very cool.
Nice.
Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins. Right, next up, big news. Frosthaven, which is a massive expansion for Gloomhaven, is coming next year to Kickstarter. Ben, yeah, so I would imagine you have been digging into this one.
Oh my God, yes. I cannot wait. So this is from Isaac Childress of Cephalofair Games. And obviously, he made one of the biggest games that has ever existed on the tabletop, Gloomhaven, both literally and figuratively. And now he just wants even more money by creating Frosthaven. So this is going to be a new, massive, big box expansion, or sort of standalone or expandalone, I guess that's the kind of word you'd use, for the Gloomhaven universe. It's going to come with a whole bunch of new characters. Obviously, a lot of them sort of secret and boxed away, and some of them available to play with straight away. You've also got a whole bunch of new scenarios, new missions. You've got a whole mass of new items and everything. And basically, it's going to be an entirely new way for you to dive in and play Gloomhaven from, you know, that sort of baseline. So if you don't want to go back and play the original Gloomhaven, you can just go and pick this one up and start playing the game. And one of the big things he says is that he wants to try and make this a really big sort of adventure for everyone, both sort of starting out from the beginning and also those that have played through the original Gloomhaven and completed all the scenarios and that kind of thing as well. We're going to hopefully learn a little bit more about the game because PAX Unplugged is happening this weekend and he's doing a big panel there. So hopefully next week we'll be able to talk a little bit more about the different characters and kind of what he has planned for it. And one of the big focuses is he's going up into the sort of northern areas of the world that he's created, and he's going to be telling an entirely new story. And one of the focuses around that is the idea that there's going to be a lot more interesting stuff to do with the kind of factions that exist there. So as well as just being able to go out and fight all these different factions, there may also be a little bit of diplomacy in the mix as well, a little bit more of a role-playing element, which would be kind of cool. So we'll have to see how it all pans out and comes together. Cool. And obviously, this is Isaac Childress. He makes amazing games, and I'm sure this is going to be just as good. So.
Quick question, Ben. Is there not meant to be like years upon years worth of content in the original Gloomhaven box?
There is, yes. There is years upon years, and you can go back and play through all the different scenarios again. So.
Yeah, I would love to know if anyone has actually made it through every single scenario yet. Just because there was apparently meant to be that much stuff in there.
Yeah, My group, we're probably maybe three or four missions away from the final sort of main quest, I think. But there is still loads and loads of different scenarios in the book that we haven't even touched or looked at. And that's not discounting all the fact that we've gone off on branching narratives as well. And there's also the replayability of doing random scenarios too. So if you just focus on the main quest, a little bit like if you're playing a video game, you can sort of power towards the end, as it were. But there is still a lot of content just in the main original Gloomhaven box to play through. So this is going to be one that people might pick up and just sort of amalgamate with everything they've already got to try and make an even bigger collection. So.
What's the other thing that's in the post there? Jaws of the Lion.
Yeah, so the other thing is an update on the game's sort of like more mass market appeal version of Gloomhaven. So this is one that he's going to have at a lower price point. So the price point for Gloomhaven is pretty high. It's somewhere around £90 to £100. But if you're going to be picking up Jaws of the Lion, it's going to be coming in around the sort of £30, £40, $50-ish mark. And it will come with a whole new set of heroes for you to play with, and also a slightly more cut down and focused scenario and narrative for you to play as well. So if you don't have the money to spend on the larger version of Gloomhaven, you can kind of get in and enjoy exactly the same mechanics and exactly the same kind of world building experience with Jaws of the Lion, which will be coming out, I think it's sort of like mid next year, which is pretty cool. So yeah.
Cool. Is the purchase decision really just price, or is it easier to play Jaws of the Lion? Or
One of the big focuses, I think, for the Jaws of the Lion one is, as I was saying, I think it's that slightly more streamlined narrative. So maybe if you've looked at Gloomhaven and thought the whole branching thing and having to, you know, go through all those different missions to try and find the sort of main quest is a little bit too daunting for you, the kind of more streamlined nature of what you get with Jaws of the Lion might be the sort of defining factor of why you pick that up rather than picking up the core Gloomhaven.
Which sounds interesting, because when you talk to me about hundreds of stuff, I'm sitting thinking, I will never get the time.
Could I commit to play all of that?
Whereas you give me this cheaper option where I can dip in and go, well, I will have a bit of that flavor because I like the look of it, but can't justify the big price because I know I'm never going to go through all the content that's in the book.
Well, I mean, like there are sometimes whenever you look at a massive game and go, yeah, there's a ton in there, I just can't get through it, even if for the money it is a good deal. So sometimes whenever you look for games, you're looking to go, I want to drop, what, 40 quid on a board game this month?
It's only a good deal if you can get the US side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on. War Games Atlantic previewing some World War One models. Timing is perfect for this.
Yeah, so I'll let Jerry wax lyrical about this in a second, but just to give you the sort of like brief overview of this, they're going to be doing a whole set of new late war German infantry that fits within the period of 1917 to 1918. But as Jerry has said in previous shows, they've done a really good job of trying to sort of fill the gaps in the market, as it were, with plastic models. And they're looking pretty good from this early preview. So,
what do you think of these then, Jerry?
They're not bad. They are late war Germans. So I want to see more pickle helms on people. I want to see more spikes.
The wee spiky ones.
Yeah, yes. From early war. But this is going to be the first of their Great War range, because they're currently breaking down into classical fantasy, ancient empires, which is going to be Persians and other things. Then this is the sort of the third branch of releases they're going to be doing. So they are planning on doing all the major players in the Great War in plastic. As to whether we see all of them next year or if they're going to be over the space of time as they weave other bits and pieces in, because they have plans. Their Persians are back from tooling. The Space French are currently about to go into release. Dark Age Irish have just gone for tooling. These are early renders, so they've finished the renders as of midweek. So they're getting to the stage where they'll be able to do the first prints and check to see how they are, and then they're going to go for tooling because they're looking to release those early next year. So they are working like a traction engine. They're just, you know, as one thing comes off the design, the next one's going in, so that they have a very consistent release plan ahead. We don't know where it's going. There is another, it's not fancy, there's another box, a mystery box, which I think is historic, that they haven't told anybody what it is at all, that we're due to see at the end of this year as well. So perhaps we'll get to see something else for the Great War, or it might be something totally out of left field. So they've been doing some beautiful stuff and very filling up the niches. Because Great War is, it's one of those ones where not many people play it in 28, and if you're playing it in 28, you have to go for metal models.
Yes. Yeah.
Being able to lay your hands on a big box set of plastics to fill out and then just have to dip into other people's ranges to get the
specialist units,
machine guns, wherever they happen to be, pioneers, will be interesting. So yeah.
Cool.
It's a good way of doing it.
I like the bolts on our helmets.
Yeah, that's so they can strap extra armor on, because if you were going to stick your head above a trench, snipers would tend to shoot you in the forehead first. So those little notches are so they can hang additional armor on their forehead.
Really?
Yep. Or if you're specifically a sniper, you get trench armor, so they have breastplates as well as the additional armor on the helmet, and then they would stick their head above the parapet and be less worried about having it shot off.
Well, you mean breastplates sort of similar to the stuff that the Soviets were using in World War II, sort of breastplate type thing, or just bits of metal?
No. Full, as if you'd just gone into a local museum and it's stolen one of their medieval breastplates of something. That's what they had.
It needed to be seriously thick, though.
It was quite thick, yeah. But generally they were just for snipers who were sitting a bit further away and then just completely encased in metal.
Because if you shot at armor or something, you go straight through it. So these were just big, thick, chunky plates just in one particular region then?
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Sticking with the historical theme, last piece of news. Late Saxon archers and slingers coming out of footsore.
Yeah, so this is just a little bit of an extra thing that I put at the end of every news section now, specifically for Lloyd, so you can see some stuff to do with the Dark Ages.
Terry's smiling too.
And Jerry, of course, as well. And this is a set of new slingers and late Saxon archers that they're going to be throwing into the mix, hopefully coming out quite soon. But also, this came out at the same time as a little bit of a nudge from Andy Hobday from Hobday Games, that they're going to be doing a little bit of a Dark Age game next year as well, a little bit of a Dark Age skirmish game. Yeah. So if you're interested in playing something like that and using these amazingly dynamic and awesome-looking miniatures, then you've got an option there as well. I when I saw these, I was like, hey, that's kind of cool. I've seen some slingers. And then as someone pointed out in the comment as well, it's really cool to see someone who actually loosed his sling as well.
Yeah.
He sent the bullet flying off, which I think is very, very cool. And also, that ranger, that sort of archer in the middle of the second picture with his hood up, looks like an absolute badass. And I just want him. I don't care about everything else. I just want that guy.
That's a total Robin Hood for you right there.
He is, yeah.
That's the way to do it.
The funny thing is, just the day before these came out, me and Jerry were talking in the studio, and Jerry came in, and I was like, Jerry, what about this rule set for Dark Age that Andy Whatnot was supposed to be coming out with?
Yeah.
Hadn't heard about it.
Haven't heard about it in a while. And then he went, Baron War stuff has started to land and we're going to be doing this. So this is, Matt Bickley has been doing an awful lot of Saxons for footsore, none of which have been released yet. Mm. They've just been going, these are coming, and here's some more, and here's some Huscarls, and then here's some Slinger, and here's some Bond, and just going, that's nice, that's great, yeah, oh, Charles, oh, great, smashing. You're going to release them any at all? You're just going to keep teasing me, are you,
yeah,
Andy?
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing?
Here's what you could have had.
Tease, yeah. So, yeah, interesting to see. I'll be very curious as to see whether or not the Dark Age rule set is, because obviously Mortal Gods is a similar system to Test of Honor, Samurai game with Grey For Now Games. That footsore release. So will this be a Dark Age version of Test of Honor?
Mm-hmm.
Or will it be something completely new?
Yeah.
So, and will this be usable for Baron Wars?
As the will Dark Age system, yeah. Will it be flexible enough to go through? Because you would imagine they should be.
Mm-hmm. You would think.
So yes.
Cool. Right. Kickstarters. Mm-hmm. Ben, you have two that you can pick. What did you decide to pick this week?
Okay, so the first one is from the guys at GameStart Edizioni, who we know very well from their stuff on the Fantasy World Creator.
Oh, yes.
By World Creator.
Yes.
And this is, so we're looking at a draft page right now. It is going to be live by the time you watch this episode. But this is for their 3D terrain elements, which will allow you to turn your normal dungeon tiles that you got from the original Kickstarter into actual full-on 2.5D, 3D style dungeons that you can play out your campaigns on. So there's going to be a whole bunch of different selections within each of the boxes that allow you to build things like dungeon passageways and sort of dungeon layouts. You'll also be able to build entire towns with buildings that have multiple layers and roofs and insides and that kind of thing as well. You're also getting all the things that we absolutely love from games like HeroQuest and Warhammer Quest and that kind of thing, with little tiny tables and doors and trees and that kind of thing too. So you can create outdoor situations at the same time. all of the stuff is going to be available in their kind of, and I'm just going to call it their sketch aesthetic, which they used for the original Fantasy World Creator, which would allow you to sort of create the image on the tabletop of your sort of DM who's kind of like scribbled something out on paper and that kind of thing. It's not going to be the aesthetic for everybody, but I think it works really nicely with what they've already done so far and allows things to not clash too much when it comes to the two different sets they've been working on. On top of that as well, because it's a game style like Dizioni and their kind of like brand of stuff, all of this is going to be rewritable and reusable. So you'll be able to scribble on it and do what you want with pens and that kind of thing as well. So if you want to draw additional streams and things onto the tiles, you can do that and add creepers and vines to walls and that kind of thing as well at the same time.
Or you can draw in a hidden door.
Or you can draw in a hidden door, exactly. All of this comes together with a whole bunch of sort of like new thicker pieces that shouldn't warp or damage and that kind of thing as well. And they just slot into some basic plastic bases that you should hopefully be able to see as you go to Kickstarter, allow you to create four-way scenarios and that kind of thing as well on the tabletop. You've also got sort of clear ones and sort of fuller ones for doors and that kind of thing too. So if you want to build things like doorways that open and that kind of thing, you've got some options there at the same time. Finally, the other, just want to add a little extra thing as well. Because this is obviously going to be elevating things to the 3D medium, they've also worked with another little miniature company to create four special characters that you'll be able to pick up and use in your games as an adventuring party. So if you want to pick that up as well, you've got those things there. Oh, yes, and one more thing.
And one more thing.
The standees that they've actually done for this one. In the first Kickstarter for Fantasy World Creator, they were just pieces of card. Now they've taken a lot of sort of... lessons that they learned from doing the sci-fi one, and they've actually done them as cut out versions of them, so they actually have a little bit more of a silhouette on the tabletop rather than just being pieces of card that you stick into the face, which I think is a really nice little addition to the game. So
I love this stuff.
I getcha.
We are hoping to try and get this stuff into the studio to have a bit of a closer look at it, so as soon as we get a chance we'll sit down and actually bring you a closer look at this stuff. I love the black and white aesthetic of this dungeon stuff. And whenever I saw the initial pictures of the 3D aspect to it, where it started to take it that 2.5D dungeon, I was thinking, okay, so I struggled to imagine it when when I first heard that it was coming. But then when I actually saw their execution of it, I thought, oh, no, that is slick. I can't wait to see it in the
flesh. It'll release so many models off your shelf. You know, there's so many models that would be cool for doing fantasy adventures with, sitting on your shelf, unpainted. Now you can just spray them grey and drop them in, or spray them and do some zenith lighting and drop them in.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? Spray them white and ink.
Because when they put the four miniatures that they're working on, when they drop them in, because they're grey already and they're dropping in amongst all the line work, you could literally just spray it grey. And like you say, ink it.
Do you know what? Let's do that. Let's have a play with the aesthetic. Because that, do you see that look there, right? That look there is actually very achievable with a black undercoat and in a zenith dusting. Will give you that feel. It will give you that feel. And I think we could very quickly recreate that feel and put it in. And then suddenly you could unlock hundreds upon hundreds of those minis that you've bought from Bones that you thought you would never ever going to feel were finished.
Yeah, and it always
will give you a finished method, a finished look to them.
But it gives you them in such a fashion that should you ever just take a mood someday to look at it and go, you know what, I really want to paint you. It's already primed, it's already zenith, and you can just go for
you
it.
You just take it
from there. You've just got the class undercoat work from.
Yeah, you just run inks over the top of it, and you can add whatever color to it you want.
Yeah.
Right, Ben, what's your last Kickstarter, man? What did you pick? The pressure's on. Pressure's on, Ben.
So for the other one, I've picked up another massive, adventurous role-playing style game on the tabletop.
Of course you have.
Divinity Original Sin, the board game by Lynn Vander Studios, done in collaboration with the people that created the very, very, very popular PC game. So this is a new, completely cooperative adventure game where you tell the stories from the world of Divinity Original Sin, which is really cool. You're going to take on the role of each of these different characters and have their own backstories, their own interests, their own chapters and narratives that they want to try and explore on the tabletop. And you will play through their stories to the use of things like adventure books that we're very used to seeing now from a lot of other fantasy adventure games as well on the tabletop. But all of the choices and consequences that you do will matter. Another thing that we've heard a lot about as well before. One of the really interesting and key things here that I think is really different is that they've taken it, they take the idea of this sort of adventure game, and instead of having it so that once you get to the combat phase, you start to lay out loads of tiles and you completely change the way that the game is set up on the tabletop, they actually have in the center of a board, effectively like a wheel, which will have a whole bunch of different locations around it. And so this cuts down the idea of having to do loads of miniature-based combat and all that kind of thing. Mm. And instead, you'll go to these different locations and you'll fight out your things there as your individual character or as part of your party. And then you'll flip over the cards cool. to see what kind of rewards you get as well.
Let's play the Wheel of Misfortune there, Ben, huh?
The Wheel of Misfortune, basically. That's effectively what it is. The wheel itself actually works as part of the mechanics of the game as well, because within the center of it is a little initiative dial that will count down how combat works. And all of the actual combat abilities and sort of how that plays out mechanically in the game is almost directly taken from the PC game, which effectively had a little bit of a tabletop feel to it anyway. So it was a really nice transition period over from that to this. You'll have what's called sort of action points on your character's card. And when you spend those, you'll be able to do certain things on, for example, with your weapons or your special abilities and that kind of thing as well. And this will allow you to sort of roll a whole bunch of different dice, color-coded to the different kind of actions you want to take in order to see if you succeed or fail in them. The other really awesome thing about this that I really liked is that they've taken over the crafting mechanics from Original Sin and they've brought it into the board game. So now if you have two different components, they will have a number on them. And when you combine them, that will tell you what number to go and find from a huge deck of cards. And that's what you make. So you might find like a root for something and you might have some water from a different place. And when you combine them, you'll be like, oh, cool. That's how you create a strength potion or something like that, which I think is a really nice little additional detail. The other really cool thing they've done about this, and it's something that's a little bit different, and it'll be interesting to see how this works going forward, but they've got what's called the Chronicle system. And this means that every choice and consequence you make, you can then feed through to Lynvander Studios, and they will input it into a large digital database. And this will inform what happens in further chapters as part of the story going forward. Now, I don't imagine this means that they're going to be creating like another Divinity Original Sin box game later on in the future. Hopefully this just means they're going to be doing another book or another narrative scenario set they'll be able to pick up. And that will have all the things that you did in the first one as a collective pushed forward into the future. So one of the examples they did raise is, say, for example, the vast majority of players burnt down the tavern in X town or something. That means that in the future, that's not going to be there. And so you'll have to sort of, you know, mess things around and see how the sort of narrative and things go in the future as well. But yeah, a really big, immense looking project from the guys at Lynvander here. Sounds pretty interesting. If you like Divinity Original Sin, this might be something for you.
I like that. I like the living world aspect that they're moving towards. I think it's a nice, innovative addition. You know, it brings a legacy aspect to the game, especially whenever it's a group-based legacy aspect based on...
I will also say that while they've got that sort of legacy aspect to it, all of the components that they've put within the game itself are not destructible. They can be reused. So even if you go through the game and you play through it for the first time and you want to go through it again and do it differently, you're completely able to do that. The only thing is that you won't be able to then input that as part of your Chronicle system's sort of journey going forward. That's only sort of like a one-time use sort of code thing. But they did say that through, and this is a claim that a lot of companies make, obviously, so the proof will be in the pudding, but you'll only see, as they say, 25% of the game on one playthrough. So there's a lot of depth in there as well going forward.
There we go. Okay, Ben, thank you for that. Right, that is your lot. Remember, next weekend, you can join us for the Star Wars Hobby Weekend. Mm-hmm. For any of you guys that are supporters of On Tabletop and all you otters, if you're a member of the Cult of Games, we will see you tomorrow on XLBS. We get a bit of hobby time, and I've got some cool stuff to tell you, Justin. I'm going to educate you, man. I've got interesting.
Edumacation?
I've got edification for you. Okay, man. You'll love it.
I believe Justin has a gift for you as well.
Has he?
From my holidays, I brought everybody a gift. Yeah, you weren't here, so you didn't get yours last week.
Except Ben.
Did you bring me a souvenir?
I did the traditional, and I went out and I found the finest gifts that Lanzarote had to offer for everybody.
Do you know what, Justin?
So Jerry got...
Wait, you can tell me an XLBS. But I just want to say, this is why I love you dearly, man. Mm. You know, it's just working class. This is working class.
He hasn't seen the gift yet.
Frankie Boyle nailed it. He said, the difference between working class and middle class is all about the souvenir. Okay. The middle class will go on holiday, and they will buy a souvenir for themselves to remind them of the holiday. Mm. Whereas the working class, they go on holiday, and they buy souvenirs for all their family and friends as a memory of a holiday that they never went on.
Yes. This is amazing.
Very true.
This means I'm middle class. Yeah! Finally!
Right, guys, thank you so much. A massive thank you to Ben on the screen, Jerry in the chair, Justin in the other chair, and Lloyd in that chair, and I'm in the final chair. You have been watching The Weekender. Come and support us and join us on XLBS tomorrow. Have a great week of gaming, guys.